Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 27th of March. Very nice to have you with us. We have a terrific panel assembled. I would think we pretty much always have a terrific panel assembled, but we're just going to show off for you here in the next 90 minutes and show you just how great these folks are. Let me introduce them to you. First of all, we welcome your letters. We always love to get your letters. And we like seeing what's going on in the world. We welcome you to write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper. He joins us every Tuesday, and we are thrilled to have him here today. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. Libby Post is back today. She was here yesterday. She's here today. We can't get enough of her. She is our political consultant of the stars.
Oh, yeah.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, darling. I'm good. Whoops.
Very nice to have you with us. J.P. Miller, the man. He is here. He is he's the man behind the Empire Report, a very important news service in our state, and is just a brilliant man, and we're thrilled to have him on the program. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you with us. Speaking of brilliant, Dr. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, Joe. Upbeat.
Just to prove us all wrong.
Yes, that's right. It's good to have you here as well. Of course, let's get started with what's going on in the world. And, there's always some good stuff, right? There's always some interesting things. So let's talk about Vladimir Putin. And we talked about the story yesterday, but now we're getting some of the behind the scenes of when leaders of the European Union gathered last Thursday night for a working dinner inside their new headquarters. The conversation turned to Russia over scallops and lamb. Prime Minister Theresa May of Britain shared intelligence detailing the high probability that the Russian state had carried out the poisoning of a former Russian spy on British soil. Usually, Mrs. May is the odd woman out at the EU gatherings, given that she is trying to negotiate Britain's departure from the bloc, but not this time. By the next morning, European Union leaders agreed that a coordinated response was needed. Well, that coordinated response eventually got to the United States yesterday when the president and the White House announced that there would be the expulsion of 64 Russian agents, and including the office in Seattle. So the question that lingers is, perhaps we know the answer to this, but the question that lingers is, what took the United States so long?
Well, to me, this is one of the most interesting things we have ever seen. We have a president who clearly is in the bag for Putin, right? Mm-hmm. We know that. From day one, Putin is a good guy. He doesn't believe this whole thing about the Russians. Meantime, he appoints all kinds of people around him, and they all think that the Russians are bad people and have done bad things here. So Trump himself, the head guy, is the odd man out. There's been some speculation that they got a little something on him, and therefore he can't start up. So when it comes out that we put the 60 people out on their behinds, it turns out Trump has nothing to say about that. He sends out whoever, one of those people he sends up to the lectern, which means he's still in the bag for Putin. Mm-hmm. That's all I have to say.
But he had no choice. He had to demonstrate to the rest of the world and to our NATO allies, and he was under enormous pressure to do this by the people around him, that we stand with them and we will go along with them and be part of this denouncement of Russia and what they did in the UK. And then he was under enormous pressure by, I think, both parties in Congress to do this. And it also allows him to appear not to be afraid of Putin, which is important for him right now when the Russian probe is closing in on him, evidently.
No, I think that's a brilliant analysis.
Yeah.
I want to compliment you on it.
Why, thank you.
I was surprised by how many Russian spies we have in the country. I remember being surprised when Obama expelled, I think, a dozen off Long Island a year and a half ago, saying, you know, they have a big mansion on Long Island and they're just operating. It's kind of crazy that we would allow Russian spies to be in the country.
Oh, no, they're not Russian spies. They're Russian diplomats.
They're
what we call assets.
Right,
but guess what,
no
JP?
Difference.
We have assets too.
Right, and so why does Russia allow us to have spies? I don't get it. And
it's part of the game.
Well, after tomorrow, they won't.
We have to cover our assets.
Yeah. Right.
I'm wondering what all these spies from around the world who are going to be back in Russia are going to be doing.
They're going to go somewhere else.
Well, there is
handball.
They'll do a data dump and then go somewhere else.
There is a difference, isn't there, between what a dictatorship can do and a democracy can do when it comes to using those assets. I mean,
technically, you're right.
Libby's making a downward, you know, thing.
Downward facing dog face?
Yes, yeah. With her mouth. Yes.
I mean, historically, okay.
Not sure.
The CIA has taken down dictators and taken out governments, even democracies.
No question.
Right.
So, we try to give Castro a poison cigar. Mm-hmm. Remember that whole thing? Yeah.
What about Iraq? You know, we took out basically what was an elected government, or Iran rather, elected government, and even Iraq.
Yeah, Iraq too. Right.
Yeah, Michael, you're on the you're
look
on the
at all
today.
The nation building we tried to do in South America.
Do you think there's a difference between then and now?
I think so. I think they're a little more cautious, and there's more oversight in Congress, and there's certainly we've learned there's things do get out now, and they get reported, and there's more scrutiny.
But I'm sorry, Joe, but this is all about This is all about the idea that you went too far this time. Every level of spying is acceptable. We can take all of that, but you don't go killing people,
but they
on our home turf,
on Britain's home turf.
Yes.
That's right.
But they've already did. They
our
did
meaning
it
collectively.
Yeah, but they did it to somebody else, didn't they? Do it to somebody else last year, and this is sort of Putin's modus operandi is to get rid of everybody.
And not only that, I did read somewhere in this vast collectivization of material that comes by my head, I did read somewhere.
It's a picture, doesn't it?
In one ear and out the other. Right.
That the Russian parliament had in fact passed a law that said it was okay to do this.
Yeah.
On foreign soil, in
as
terms
if they
of
needed a law, right?
Right. As if they really voted. I mean, that's the other thing. They're just a rubber stamp for Putin. What I find,
as opposed to the Republicans in our Congress,
right? So. Well, this is true. But what I find interesting in all of this is here we have Theresa May, who's trying to negotiate their Brexit from the Union, calling upon the European Union to work with them. I think this might be foreshadowing of something to come, where they really don't exit.
Really?
Oh, really?
Well,
Is that a prediction?
Well, there were plenty of news stories with the whole Cambridge Analytica stuff that they also the Russian bonds were also
Brexit
trying
vote.
To influence the Brexit vote, and I think in Britain they have a little more gumption to say we're not going to take this anymore.
Well, you think there'll be a do-over? I mean, that's what it would take, right?
Yes, it would.
I don't think so. I think
seems like it's along the way too far.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think the
vote to come back.
I think the Brits have always treasured that independence of theirs, and that's what this has really been all about. They don't want to follow the rules that are being laid down by the EU. It's just too much for them. So I say they stick with it, because otherwise they would have done it earlier.
I don't know. I thought the EU was really working for everybody.
But I think you're right. I think it's profound that Theresa May is able to gain that support from across Europe. It
but
shows
there's a lot of, they have a
bigger.
Lot. Well, so, I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
I mean,
after
I think
you, after you,
Alphonse Gaston.
But as you were saying, Alan, there's a lot at stake, and
yeah.
So one of the things that I kept on hearing last night is that, and Mike, you said this is the first thing you said when we started the subject, which is, you know, you really had no choice. You had to do this. The question that was coming up in some of the conversations I heard on cable news last night was, what will this do to the relationship between Trump and Putin? Well, probably nothing, because Putin understands that and still realizes that the relationship is the relationship. Was that, do you think that's safe to say?
Yeah. Hey, what about Selma Kaplan and James Patterson?
Hey, I saw her on my way out.
Yeah, Selma.
Big hug.
Yeah, Selma's here. She's doing her thing. But did you want to say something about that?
I thought we agreed not to, but sure.
I didn't agree. I certainly did not agree.
Well, James Patterson and Marshall Karp have written a new book, and it's called NYPD Red Alert. It's out today. It's the fifth book in the series. James Patterson, as you know, has written every book in the world. So,
but he doesn't write them anymore.
No, he writes everything.
Oh, does he?
No,
okay.
It's
quite prolific.
So Marshall Karp, who is our dear friend and writer, and yes, wrote this, you know, worked with James in writing this book.
Has put
the ADA in the book is a wonderful character by the name of Selma Kaplan.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, that's terrific.
And, does it get better than that?
And Marshall is going to join us at 11:30 this morning to talk about the new book and to be with us, just because he's very funny and we always love having him on. And hopefully we'll get Selma in here to talk about life as an ADA.
I told her she should come in here.
Yeah.
She gave
I think she will come in. She said she would come in.
She digitalized me.
Yeah, I think you put the pressure on.
Interesting way to put it. Didn't James Patterson recently co-author a book with the former president of the United States?
It is not out yet. It'll be out in June, but it is in the process, and we'll.
Which president?
Bill Clinton.
Clinton. That should be interesting.
Yeah.
Intrigue in the White House. Perhaps?
Yeah. Well, it's a book about a president who goes missing and what goes into that. And from what I heard in the stories that Marshall was telling me the other day, that actually Bill Clinton was very active in the writing process. So
Did he work with him too in that one?
Marshall didn't in that one, no.
No.
But Patterson and Clinton worked together.
We'll work with you.
Patterson is incredibly prolific.
What were we talking about before?
We were talking right in the middle of all that. We were talking about Soviets.
Libby just made a face. She said, OMG. She said, OMG. She's looking down at her computer. I can't wait to find out what it's all about.
Well,
it may not have anything to do with us.
It does, in the sense of what we were talking about yesterday. State Senator Marty Golden,
Republican state senator.
Right. His aide, Anthony Testaverde, put up a Facebook post comparing the kids from the march to Hitler.
Someone said,
after a man pointed out Hitler killed Jews and the comparison was disgusting, Testaverde replied that Hitler had to start somewhere. I certainly hope Testaverde isn't going to have his job much longer and that Marty Golden does the right thing.
By the way, he's already denounced his own aide for saying it. He didn't say he was going to fire him. However, I did read this. I want you to know, not only I read it on the Empire Report.
Oh, yeah. We've covered it. And Senator Golden, I don't know if this is the same aide, but his aides have made other colorful comments on social media before.
Colorful, right?
This is hateful.
Yeah.
It's a little more than colorful. You have to start somewhere, huh?
All right. So I just want to wrap up on Russia, and then I promise we'll go to a break here. But there's this article in the Times, it's no cold war, but relations with Russia turn volatile, and the expulsion of scores of Russian diplomats from the United States, countries across Europe and beyond, has raised yet again the question of whether the world is veering back where it was during the Cold War. The alarming answer from some in Russia is no, but the situation is in some ways even more unpredictable.
Yeah, their point is that during the Cold War, it was very predictable. Everybody knew their limits. You knew where the Soviets were. The Soviets knew where you were. We kind of tracked each other and that kind of thing. Right now, you have a volatile guy in the White House. You have perhaps a very volatile, not so volatile, but not so predictable guy at the Kremlin, and it is not so predictable, and it's troubling.
I saw a picture which is worth a thousand words in one of the newspapers this morning. It may have been the Times, it may have been one of the lesser newspapers, the tabloids, which showed Trump walking along with Putin, and Putin has a stone face on him, and Trump is sort of looking at him almost imploringly. Mm-hmm. You got to go look for that picture because it tells you so much. I mean, here's this ex-KGB guy, or maybe not ex,
right.
who keeps his own counsel and who is really, a dictator.
Yeah.
And here's Trump, who really has a problem with these guys because they know more than he wants them to know. He's in a bad spot.
And Trump is really good at yelling at people and saying to, when the protesters at his speeches, he says, get the hell out, and he tells them to rough them up on the way out. And then as they expel these Russian diplomats, it's radio silence on the Trump Twitter page, which is really, as we know, Trump's vehicle for communication to the world. And he's been silent on expelling these Russian spies. Mm-hmm. The other thing I saw on CNN had this an hour ago, that a Kremlin spokesman deeply regretted U.S. decision to expel diplomats and would analyze the situation before submitting a proposal for retaliatory action to Russian President Vladimir Putin to approve.
You know, Alan, you talked about that we've been in this kabuki dance with... Yeah, that's quite the picture. With
Mike
with,
found the,
with the Soviet Union, with
Time magazine photo. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been in this kabuki dance with the Soviet Union / Russia for a very long time, and we had it during the Cuban Missile Crisis,
right.
And the thumbs were on, the fingers were on the buttons. But we had, up until this administration, even considering George W. Bush's administration, we had some of the best and the brightest backing up the president, and the president was at that level for the most part.
Sure, he had been the head. Well, right. At least one, H.W. was.
And we don't have that anymore. We just don't have that anymore. The cabinet is a bunch of flunkies. If they don't agree with him, he fires them. They don't have the depth that we need to have. Or there are people like Mike Pompeo and John Bolton who just want to do preemptive strikes.
So why has his numbers gone up 4%? Again,
42% is the latest.
44,
poll.
I thought I saw.
I
may be wrong.
I don't know. I'll check.
It's amazing.
We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll return. We have our panel. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, 9:35 on a Tuesday morning, the 27th of March. We have our panel before us. Libby Post, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok. We will start off with a few letters and then move on to some other subjects.
Thank you, Joe. Question. Quick question. You're so good at that. Quick question. Do we know what the actual conversation between President Trump and Mr. Putin last week? Thanks for such a great show.
Well, it's interesting. It's an interesting question because we were told, obviously the congratulations. That was one thing that came out of it. Yesterday, I believe in the press briefing, they said that there was some talk between the two about the expulsion of these agents. Now, I don't know if that was part of the conversation, but I believe they indicated that it was part of the conversation, as well as to the visit, right, an upcoming visit between the two men.
So they might say something like, Trump may have said something like, so Vlad, I'm under a lot of pressure here.
Got to do something.
Yeah, I'm going to throw some of your people out. You can throw some of my people out. I need some help here. I made that up.
Yeah, that does sound plausible and also comical.
So Vlad.
Mm-hmm. Vlad. Hey, buddy.
And maybe he calls him Don rather than Donald.
Is that what he calls him, Don?
I don't know.
Don and Vlad together again after all those years.
Right.
Go ahead, Adam.
What a nice couple.
Well, John says, Russian agent expulsion. I find the question asked by Joe, what took the president so long to expel him, to be yet another example of the, if the Trump cured cancer, liberals would complain about the loss of jobs in cancer centers parable.
Okay, hold it there. No, I just have a question, though. If everyone else, of all of our allies, have come out in 10, 12 days ago and asked for this action, and then we take longer, isn't that a fair question to ask what took us longer?
Yeah, yes. this is not a profile in courage on Trump's part in terms of expelling the diplomats.
Okay, I refute.
But he went a little further.
Oh, good. Let me hear more.
There's more in the letter, but he also went a little bit further, and we expelled more than anybody else did.
We had more. We're a pretty small place.
Yeah, we're bigger.
Nah, there are not that many over there.
Well, there is that. There is that. Okay, here we go.
But he wants to be the biggest all the time.
This is John.
We had the satellite. We had the Seattle Bureau that we had to take care of.
How many are there, I wonder? Are there hundreds, thousands?
I don't know.
Be some question. How many are there?
How many what are there?
Russian spies in the United States.
Russian diplomats, please.
Diplomats.
Go ahead, Alan.
This is where Roselle would tell me to shut up. Okay. John says, we clearly had to verify and not jump...
Hey, I have Roselle on the phone. No, just kidding.
We clearly had to verify and not jump the gun on expelling the agents, and that is why it took some time. I wonder if the panel will spin it if Trump at taking action immediately. I don't know what that sentence means, but you... Somebody could probably figure it out, right?
They probably are asking if he had taken immediate action, how we would have found some negative aspect of that. Yes.
Tom says
we would have.
Tom says Scotland and Brexit.
It's our jobs, damn it.
Hi. If England resents the distant, overarching hand of Brussels, they should understand why their partner country, Scotland, resents the distant, overreaching hand of Westminster. Time for Scotland to regain its independence. And that's from Tom in Connecticut. Thank you, Tom. And then from Molly. Brexit reversal. Is it possible the dismissal of Russian spies from Britain, when combined with the Cambridge Analytica bombshell, will result in a Brexit do-over? We actually talked about that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of buyer's remorse about the vote to begin with, and that's from Molly.
There's a lot of buyer's remorse about the election in 2016.
Right. Yeah, a lot.
And then from Jerome on Putin, no one knows what his game is. He will wring the maximum advantage from his position.
You know, the one thing that Putin does like, it's discourse and disunity and people in chaos. And this was a reversal of that for the UK to be supported so strongly by the NATO allies and now the United States. That means something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trump likes discourse, too. Oh, no, the other one.
Well, discord, one. Certainly, and chaos.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, he was going for something.
Oh, I know what he was
base.
Going for. I'm trying to save it.
Sorry.
Libby, thanks.
Anytime.
Speaking of saving, Mike, tell us about the story, your top story this morning, which is a very troubling story. But I must say that this is a story that the Times Union has been covering for the better part of a decade and has done just an amazing job on.
Right. It is the story about Nexium, which is an executive training program based in the capital region. They also have affiliates.
Is that how you pronounce it? Nexium?
Like the purple pill.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's
spelled N-X-I-V-M. Nexium.
Yeah.
But we don't say that.
It gives us all indigestion.
But it's based here in the capital region, was founded here in the capital region. One of the co-founders, Keith Raniere, who is known as Vanguard within the circles of Nexium, has been arrested. On a federal complaint, a federal investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Brooklyn produced this complaint, and they issued a warrant for his arrest a few weeks ago. It took him a while to find him. He was at a very expensive resort in Mexico, hiding out.
Half the Berkshires go to that place.
Yeah, well, half the Berkshires have money that they can afford that place. But he was with a number of women, and immigration officials went there to apprehend him yesterday. See, he had been using encrypted emails and stopped using his phone, and he had gone down there in November, probably expecting that there would be a warrant for his arrest. And They took him into custody, and the women jumped in the car and chased him. And there was a high-speed chase away from this resort as they brought him into authorities. And U.S. authorities brought Ranieri over to the United States, and he's going to be arraigned today in Dallas in U.S. District Court and probably brought back to New York.
I missed part of the story. The women chased him?
Yes.
Which women?
The women who are with him at the resort. He's always surrounded by women. And that's really the substance of the...
I think he has a rotating group of 15 women that he's...
15 to 20, it said.
That he's intimate with, yeah. Mm-hmm. But nobody, not the other way around.
I mean, this is a horrible story in that there is... that
it's disgusting.
Terrible. By the way, the thing I couldn't get over the story, he was charged with sex trafficking and forced labor. There is branding a part of this. Branding of the women. There is, and you, again, the Times Union has reported on a lot of this over many years.
They took the lead.
But one of the things that struck me in the story is that all of this going on brings 15 years.
Oh.
Yeah.
That does not seem, very high to me.
Not only that, Joe, but. Well, some of the fattest cats in the world are in on this, like the
multiple counts.
The Bronfmans.
The Seagram.
Yeah. The women.
Claire Bronfman, the heir to the Seagram liquor fortune, has been a major benefactor of Keith Raniere and NXIVM. But the thing, the 22-page federal information that was used to bring these charges describes just a very weird... situation with this secretive group of NXIVM, and women said they were coerced into joining a slave master organization. They were branded, as you said, literally carved into their head, Ranieri's initials and those of Allison Mack, an actress who is identified in the complaint as a co-conspirator.
Who was on WB's Smallville,
right.
By the way.
That's right.
Go ahead.
And their initials would be carved into these women. The women were in a sort of a pecking order where you had slaves reporting to you and everybody was required to have sex with Keith Raniere. This was all in the federal indictment, and it's in extraordinary detail. We have that on our website along with the story today by Brendan Lyons, previous stories, and our series in 2011, our major series, which looked into NXIVM and began to draw a lot of attention to this very unusual organization and very secretive organization based right here in the Capital Region.
I want to give you a compliment. It's not like me, but I want to. The Times Union has done terrific work on this.
Yeah, I think we've devoted resources to it. We see it as an important story, and the rest of the world is looking now. The
New
York Times.
You've won awards for this story.
Oh, yeah. We won the New York State News Publishers Awards, the Associated Press Annual State Competition Awards for Investigative Journalism, and others. And it demonstrates that a local newspaper can really make a difference.
Yeah. I want to go to Libby, if I can, for a moment, Joe. Libby, as the sole female on the panel today, I wonder if you could sort of give us some insight into what may be going on here with the women. Forget about this nut.
Well, I think, first of all, one of his women in the...
in this weird
It was the late 90s, early 2000s. I did a speaking gig, and this woman came up to me and gave me a card. I'd like to come talk to you. I'm like, yeah, fine. Okay, so she comes, and I'm looking at the card, and, you know, these stories had started to percolate about it. And I said, she did her song and dance, we'd love for you to be part of this, the Executive Success Program, ESP, blah, blah, blah. I said, is this Keith Raniere's thing? Oh, yes. I said, you can get the hell out of my office. I was a little more colorful than that, but I just threw her out of my office. These are, I mean, I can't speak to the psyche of some of these women, but there are women who are taken in. We've seen it time and time again, not just with him, but with other Svengali-type people who are taken in and just want to be reaffirmed in their femininity or their womanhood or whatever it is, and I don't understand it. I don't understand how women can can be taken in like this, but there are plenty of women out there. I mean, I'm a strong woman and I'm a lesbian and I would never be taken in by this, but there are plenty of women out there.
Huh? Qualified.
I'm a qualified lesbian. And there are plenty of women out there that are taken in by this because they want to be part of something. They want to feel like that they belong to something and that he is Svengali-like and that something magical might happen. It's amazing to me that this has gone on as long as it has. And that they're and but the thing is that he's had all this money from the Bronfmans. He's been able to fight it legally time and time again, and hopefully now it'll stop.
Well, now I'm sorry. Go ahead.
On the woman's part, I think just to get in, or what is alleged in the complaint, just to kind of get in, they would get a lot of evidence on the women.
Yeah,
they
for
would
this
have
part of it. Yes.
Naked pictures and that kind of stuff.
So the women would provide collateral, yes, collateral, is what they called it, so they could blackmail them in case they tried to speak publicly.
It's very cultish.
Well, I mean, I think Mike had the best term. It's weird. I mean, it is when you read it, of just it's very strange. But so there's the aspect of the sex trafficking and the forced labor, but there's also the pyramid scheme aspect. Yeah. It seems like
the sex part is all a pyramid scheme.
It strikes me, and you make this point in the article in the Times Union, that the charges that have been filed seem to be preliminary. There will probably be many more charges.
That's right. Brendan Lyons, who's been on top of this story for us, has said that the federal prosecutors are making it clear that this is enough to take him into custody and get it going, and there will likely be deeper, more details and more charges as they get into this in this case. They've also asked that he be held without bail because he's a flight risk. He has access to the Bronfman money, evidently, and you know the Bronfmans have an island in the Fiji Islands, and he's been there before. And they have a private jet available that they fly him around. And so
it's interesting that he didn't go there and not to Mexico.
Yeah, he would have been much safer. It would have been harder, I suppose. Who knows? But that would have brought them into it. Them it would have been collusion, perhaps, and maybe they opted not to do that. But yeah, it's
what happened a couple of weeks ago though that cracked the story really.
Well, the Brooklyn, the DA, and I'm sorry, the federal U.S. attorney in Brooklyn, and has been looking into this. And they in February they issued. Secretly, they issued an arrest warrant for him based on this information. It's kind of like an indictment. It's not called that, but it's the 22-page report, which we're basically getting all this description off of, and that they had trouble finding him. Like I said, he was off at this resort. He stopped using his cell phone. He was using encrypted emails, but they finally did track him down.
But I think the story that you guys broke about the branding.
In all fairness, the New York Times broke that, and got onto it too. In November, we were very close to having that, but then we followed it up.
You know, but that story and the doctor who was complicit in that, I think, raised this to a level of this is not just a financial Ponzi scheme. This is beyond that.
But it is financial, Libby. I mean, these women are often of means,
yeah.
And they have to pay to get into this. He would have annual events timed with his birthday up in Ranieri Wood, with his birthday every August, and they'd go up to Silver Bay on Lake George, and they'd have to pay thousands of dollars to participate. I mean, this is all about. I mean, not all about, but a lot of it is money and enriching the people who are at the leadership of NXIVM.
Absolutely, it's about money, but it's also when you. I read part of the indictment. You know, the legal papers. Mm-hmm. It's about power. It's about sex. It's about you can have sex with Keith when you have sex with all these other people. I mean, it's and the master slave relationship. It's
that's frightening.
Bizarre. Yeah. It's just bizarre.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go to letters. We'll have other subjects as well. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have a couple of letters and we'll move on to other subjects. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, Joe. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Upbeat. Trump versus Putin. If Putin has something on Trump, he would likely be reluctant to use it because if he did, Trump might be impeached. Then Putin would lose a valuable connection. Trump could take advantage and go against Putin on occasion, as he, parenthesis, his administration just did. It would be walking a tightrope, but there is some room for Trump to challenge Putin, and that's from George. And also from John, the problem with the left's hatred of firearms is these young people clearly do not understand very much about history. All the world's worst dictators before killing millions of people disarmed the populace. And lastly, in addition to providing a counter to possibly tyrannical government, firearms have also proven to be deterrent to would-be invaders. A Japanese general who did not approve of the attack on Pearl Harbor is quoted saying, "I would never invade the United States. There would be a rifle behind every blade of grass." And then Denise writes, panel, Trump has claimed that the Russians don't have any salacious material on him because he was too smart to allow himself to be compromised in a Russian hotel. Now we know from Stormy's interview that he was willing to have unprotected sex with a sex worker he just met, enough said. And by the way, I don't
know. Because she's so credible.
And by the way, I don't know that she would deserve the word, and she would object to it, sex worker.
She's not a sex worker.
Yeah.
She's a porn star. She's an adult film star. She doesn't, it's different. It's a whole different ballgame. She's not a sex worker. She's not walking the streets.
Exactly.
And so let's make the distinction here. But interesting to the gun control, the gun letter, John Paul Stevens, the former Supreme Court justice, just wrote an op-ed in the New York Times saying to repeal the Second Amendment.
Well, maybe he should have stayed there and said so.
Well.
Just all right. Saying. Let's move on to other topics. Let's talk about Stormy Daniels. Not in a punchback mode. Why Trump has been largely silent on Stormy Daniels. The counterpuncher so far has held his punches. President Trump exercised uncharacteristic public restraint Monday, following an interview on CBS's 60 Minutes in which adult film star Stormy Daniels described in vivid detail a consensual sexual encounter with Trump, a relationship the president has repeatedly denied. But privately, the president has lobbed sharp attacks at Daniels and her media tour, calling her allegations a hoax and asking confidants if the episode is hurting his poll numbers. The president even has griped to several people that Daniels is not the type of woman that he finds attractive.
Uh-huh.
Trump, who was...
And I have a bridge I'd like to say.
Hold for a second. Trump, who was among the estimated 22 million Americans who watched the Daniels interview that aired Sunday night, asked staff in the White House if they, too, had watched and wondered what they had thought of it. Someone who has spoken to him said, "The president said that he personally did not think Daniels appeared credible," added this person who had talked to the president about his interactions with the pornographic film star and did not want to be identified discussing them. So this is one part of this, the question that we have for you this morning, which is, why do you think the president is being weirdly silent on this particular part of the story? And then there is the article in the New York Times this morning that says, after Stormy Daniels, Republicans face a referendum on Trump's conduct. Well, that certainly isn't the first time, right?
No, and I think the problem for him is every time he opens it, he's got two issues. One of them is legal. I'm sure his lawyers or some lawyers saying keep shut because sooner or later, right?
He's listening to the lawyer this time.
Right.
He's honoring the non-disclosure agreement.
Well, he did
agreement.
Keep shut about Mueller for a very long time until he couldn't anymore.
Yeah.
He couldn't control himself.
I'm sure they're telling him keep shut because you're going to get called in perhaps to an interview. Either before, if you agree to go to Congress or if you agree to go talk to Mueller. And the moment he says to you, "So, did you have intercourse with this woman? And he says, "No, I didn't." Now he's lying. And that's how they got Bill Clinton, because he lied. And of course, in that case, as I've said before, the Republicans were running the show, so they were about to embarrass him with any question that they could. And then there is this other part, which you just alluded to, that if he does it, where is he really going to keep the evangelicals and the rest of them? Are they going to stay with him?
Well, some of the women are starting to tiptoe away. Yeah. Some, not all of them. But I think the guys will stick with him.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I think the guys will stick with him. The evangelical men will stick with
him. Well, as I said on my morning commentary, if anybody listened, there's no question that this is a sex-crazed country. And there are an awful lot of people out there who bought Playboy, Hustler, and all the others. And also, it's the number one moneymaker on the internet. So there are an awful lot of people who like that stuff and who wish they could be him.
Well, I think it's possible that he has a few things that he's worried about. One is his own marriage to Melania. He does not want any more attention on this with Melania. Two, he knows he's exposed. He watches this television and he sees that these women are credible. Anybody that watches these interviews,
absolutely,
I think, say these women are credible. They're not lying about it. And third, there is likely evidence that these women have or other women have that have not come out that he's concerned about. So this is something where he knows he's caught and there could actually be evidence out there on it.
Yeah, I think there's actually, believe it or not, this is the area where he's most vulnerable. He does not want to hurt his family. His son, you know, his 11-year-old son, he doesn't want to hurt his daughter and his wife. And this is causing pain. And that potential seems to be something that, you know, he has the capacity to at least, in these cases, have some form of empathy and is vulnerable. And that could be what's behind it, too. He just doesn't want this to dominate the news. And evidently, Joe, it's not affecting his poll numbers.
No.
And 42%. By the way, I don't think he gives a damn about Melania.
No, I don't either. I don't think.
I think he sees her.
I think it's inappropriate for us to make that assertion.
Oh, well, I think the only person he cares about is Ivanka. I think that's it.
Or himself.
And himself, but I think he cares about her. And but although we'll see if he lets Jared, you know, take a long walk. But
I do agree with JP that you don't need that speculation on top of everything else you've got going on.
No, but it's not speculation anymore. I mean, you have all of these women before the election.
No, I'm talking
forward.
About the state of his marriage, and that is complete speculation.
Well, you know,
people have different arrangements.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
And I don't think it's unfair. To say that, I think it's clear that he has an arrangement with her, whatever his arrangement is. Otherwise, she would have been gone like a jet plane to California.
I think she'd like to be.
All right, let's take a break. On that note, we'll take a break and we will be back. Ray Graff with news. We have many other subjects to discuss. Your letters are welcome at panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, JP Miller, and Libby Post. I'm Joe Donahue. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, as always. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We want to get to a couple of other stories and talk about what else is going on here. One of the things, we were talking about the Stormy Daniels story, and we were also talking about the GOP and facing a referendum on Trump's conduct. But there's also an article in the Washington Post this morning about the suburbs and suburban voters angry with Trump and threatening the GOP's grip on the House. So I would like to talk about this a little bit, about where the Republicans and where the Democrats are now as we head into the midterms. We talk about this a little bit on the periphery, but I'd like to spend a couple of minutes talking about it in depth. Control of the U.S. House will be decided in America's next political battleground of above-ground pools, bike trails, and oversized Tudor and Victorian houses full of working professionals. And it is a question as to where in the suburbs of Illinois and the suburbs of Ohio and Pennsylvania, of who will be there come November and the fighting for these regions. If Republicans want to hold on to the House, they'll have to compete in communities that had little to do with the working class regions that sent Trump to the White House in 2016. Affluent white-collar suburbs of Democratic cities. Many of the most competitive House seats this year are in the Tony Bedroom communities of Los Angeles, Chicago, Denver, Houston, Philadelphia, New York, and Washington. JP.
I think it's going to be a really tough year for Republicans, especially with the base. I think the base is going to be upset with the profligate spending that just got passed by Paul Ryan in the Congress and Donald Trump. I also think that in suburbs, outside of the typical GOP base, I think there are a lot of moderate Republicans that are kind of disgusted with the fact that there hasn't been some kind of modest gun control actions. You add that to mega excitement among the Democrats, and I think that it's going to be a very, very difficult recipe for the Republicans to retain control of the House in 2018. And if the Democrats take over, you have to imagine that articles of impeachment will be coming shortly thereafter.
But what about the Senate? That's going to be key to this. I mean, we can take over the House, but whether or not we can take over the Senate, whether the Dems can take the Senate.
I don't think it's any kind of slam dunk that either will happen, but I think it's more likely that the House, would go Democratic.
Yeah.
According to the Cook Political Report, which the Washington Post story cites, there's like 21 seats that are quite vulnerable that could flip from Republican to Democrat. And that would be enough to do it. But if there were, I think you're right, JP, I agree, that the articles of impeachment, they'd have the votes to approve articles of impeachment, and then it would be up to the Senate on what to do with it. There'd have to be a trial. And I think that would that would be where the profiles and courage would really matter, whether the Republicans in the Senate would continue to just back Trump no matter what, or whether they would see it necessary, especially if they're up for election in 2020.
But, wise panelists, do you not remember 18 months ago when we were sitting here and saying that it was a slam dunk that Democrats would win the House in 2016 and most likely the Senate as well as the White House? I mean, as you say, I don't think any of this is a slam dunk, right? I mean, we still have a long way to go as to what's going to happen.
It's moving
now
really fast. So much can happen. So much more can happen. It can go up and down two or three times before November.
Right. And I think there are 40 now Republicans who are not going to run.
Yes, that seems to be
the
trend.
Also,
they just don't. That's what the focus of this Washington Post story is. This guy who's decided not to run in Illinois because he just knows that everywhere he goes, they're going to be throwing Trump at him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens to the local, to the Capital Region's two Republican Congress members, Lee Stefanik and John Faso. Basically, everywhere they go, people say, well, are you supporting Trump? Are you supporting Trump? And they dance around it. They say, I support my party. I want to be, you know, they want to come across as middle-of-the-road Republicans.
Well,
and it's very difficult.
Two notes on that. First of all, Lee Stefanik invited Donald Trump to the district, right?
So
an official introduction.
Dance.
So that's so much of a dance. John Faso, meanwhile, will be dancing his way to this very studio this afternoon at 2 o'clock, correct?
That's correct.
Well, I expect he'll be asked about his support and the level of it for Donald Trump.
No, he will. And then there'll be all kinds of questions for how he voted on gun control measures and who gave him money. And did the Mercers give him money? And did other people give him money? Those will be questions. Listen, folks, don't write me stuff about how I should ask him. You ask him. That's why it's on at 2 o'clock. That's why he's on the Vox Pop. Do not pull this baloney with me. You know, it's so important. It's so important that you make the call. 1-800-348-2551.
Well, don't call now, but yes.
No.
Hold on that number.
At 2 o'clock.
Yes. You'll be on hold for a really long time otherwise, but yes.
And it is a catch-22 for these Republicans, because if they throw Trump over the under the bus, it's going to hurt them with their Republican base. And if they embrace Trump, it's going to hurt them with the moderates. And you've seen this at the state level. Right now, there's a Republican primary between Marcus Molinaro and Senator DeFrancisco. And last week, it came out that Marcus Molinaro, who's the kind of the presumptive nominee for governor, didn't vote for Trump. And the DeFrancisco campaign is using this as a tool against
Molinaro. It's fascinating.
Yes. Yeah. And so,
because it may work.
And so the Molinaro campaign is saying, hold on, you're criticizing me for not voting for Trump. You voted for him, so should the Republicans nominate the most Trumpian Republican to try to win the governorship versus Andrew Cuomo or Cynthia Nixon, whoever wins that primary?
Right.
It's a catch-22 for the Republicans.
Right. So, Alan, as far as what for Democrats and even Republicans, I mean, so not a slam dunk, and they have a lot of work to do. Republicans or Democrats certainly have a lot of work to do.
And they're notorious for messing it up.
Yes, they are. Yes,
so, for example,
are.
I was talking to somebody this morning about I'm getting a lot of mail from people. I think there are six people in the primary or five people in the primary who want to run against Faso. So most of whom most of us never heard of before.
Yeah.
And they're all trying to get their message out, and they all have acolytes who are calling and saying, why don't you do this or do that? Nevertheless, the Democrats don't have a superstar in that race.
No, so, but
no, but what?
There is one who is on the airwaves, which is Antonio Delgado.
All over the airwaves.
He's all over
the
airwaves.
Cuomo guy.
No,
right?
No, that's Gareth Rhodes, who is the Cuomo guy.
Yeah, Antonio Delgado. I've been hearing a lot from Gareth Rhodes people too.
Yeah, but Antonio Delgado has got a great media buy going, and the ads are really good. And so
great ads.
He's putting himself out there as somebody who knows what he's doing.
Yes,
and he's talking about
that's
himself.
That's all true. But can you imagine if Malcolm had decided to run for Congress?
Oh, that would have been a different ballgame.
Or if Judith Enck had decided to run for Congress, then you would have a superstar, you know, in the district. These are all people who have to prove themselves.
I think one of the real tough things for Faso is he criticizes Cuomo and says, you know, you guys are profligately spending and you guys need to lower your taxes, and then he votes for this spending bill that Trump just put through, this record spending bill.
Right. And so the deficit is trillions.
Right,
now.
And he calls himself a fiscal conservative, so he cuts taxes and raises spending at the same time. He's no fiscal conservative.
Now, I know John Faso. I've known him for a long, long time when he was in the Assembly, when he was the leader there, the minority leader. And I watched him, let's be fair about this, I watched him with Zephyr Teachout. And we did the first of those debates here at the Linda. And I have to say, I don't agree with him. You know, clearly I wouldn't vote for him. But he's a master talker.
Never underestimate John Faso.
No.
Ever.
Didn't help him in 2006 when he ran against Elliot Spitzer.
Well, that's true in Blue State, New York.
Yeah, right. But that was a statewide race, and nobody knew him in that district.
Yeah,
he can talk. He's up on the facts. I'm always impressed when I hear one of your interviews with him that he knows the policy behind the issues really well.
Again, he'll be the sole guest on Vox Pop this afternoon at 2:00.
Maybe none of you heard this.
Oh no, he'll be. He's good about that. He comes in and talks.
Mm-hmm. He does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Alan, you have a few letters. Let's get to those.
I will. What is this pause about before I'm reading?
Sneeze?
There's a potential for a sneeze.
Okay.
Waiting for bated breath here.
Richard says, Donald versus Bill. Trump has handled himself better and more respectably if we compare him with President Clinton, who lied to the public and disrespected Monica Lewinsky when he proclaimed, I never had sex with that woman. Trump is more respectable because he's simply shutting up about it. Wait a second. All over the place, he said he didn't do the deed with either of those women and any of the others who've accused him. So,
and let's not forget his grabbing comment.
Yeah, and which we can hear for ourselves.
Right.
Okay, and Rob says, what is your opinion on Alan Dershowitz's statement the president is 100% right? A special counsel should never have been appointed, and added that he has seen no evidence to suggest that crimes are committed by the president. And that's from Rob. Well, I used to think something of Alan Dershowitz. I know him.
What about the prima facie case that Trump fired Comey to stop an investigation
which he said,
Russian interference, which he openly admitted?
To the Russians. He said, the Russian thing, I fired Comey, the Russian thing's gone away. So come on.
So we think Alan Dershowitz is wrong. That's the answer.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, Chris says, I don't know if any of you saw this, but CNN interviewed several of President Trump's female supporters who were shown the Stormy Daniels 60-minute interview and were content to defend the president and debase Stormy Daniels. I have long thought and have heard from Alan that though through thick and thin, the president will maintain 30-40% support base, and this CNN panel more or less confirms it. Thoughts? I agree with you, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think people have pretty much accepted that Trump has extramarital relationships with women, and they've dealt with it. They're really just taking it from a pragmatic perspective. What can he do for my cause? A lot of people, they're looking at their 401k and their savings and their stock market, and they're saying, that's good. I'm getting people in the Supreme Court that I like.
That's what it is. It's the court and it's choice.
And there's a few other issues, you know, that they're happy with. And they're content to just sort of put up with the sort of annoying reality that this guy's a pig. A lot of presidents have had extramarital affairs, and we just didn't talk about them. We happen to be talking about this one.
And it's situational ethics for the right. It's basically.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what's going on. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting to hear Karen McDougall earlier in the week, which I thought was the more interesting interview that Anderson Cooper did last week with Trump's
paramours.
Alleged paramours.
Alleged paramours. That Karen McDougall said, "Yes, I voted for Donald." And he asked her about the grabbing tape, and she said it was disgusting, but I'm a Republican. I voted for Donald. I thought it was fat. And Anderson looked like he had been hit with a ton of bricks. He couldn't believe it.
And by the way, she said that he was in love with her and that she was in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that must be awfully hurtful for the family of Donald Trump, and I think he knows it.
Look, his son is getting divorced because, like father, like son, he cheated on his wife, too. You know, these are men.
These are
similar,
not perfect people.
No, these are men who treat women treat them like doormats. You know, they've been raised in a certain way. It's the Kennedy boys were no different.
Well, exactly. I think that people have sort of accepted that these are there are people with personal flaws. And they're really just looking for what they do in their official capacity. Now, I don't know why anyone would be happy with what's going on in the official category, but right. Some people are.
Yeah. Yeah.
But do you wonder, I guess it was during the Stormy Daniels interview, they showed the tape of, because of the connection and lawyers, when it came to the ethics of it and the campaign finance, but they showed a picture of John Edwards. You know, yeah. So that happens to John Edwards and throws him right out.
Huge deal.
Gary Hart, huge deal.
Well, the thing is, what happened to
us as a nation where we don't care about this stuff anymore?
I have an answer for you.
Good.
Gary Hart defied the allegations and says, "I'm not cheating. Catch me.
Follow me. That was an invitation. And they followed him
to the monkey business with Donna Rice.
And with John Edwards.
Yes.
He portrayed himself as this loving husband to this cancer survivor of a wife to whom he was dedicated, who both of them had experienced a tragedy. And they did, a real tragedy with the loss of one of their children. That's the difference. If someone portrays themselves, and I hesitate to even say the names of politicians who we know, but think of a politician you know who you believe is a dedicated family person. Just dedicated to their spouse and dedicated to their children and their family situation. If that person were to be caught up in a sexual, liaison and some kind of scandal, that would be shocking. Trump never portrayed himself as this dedicated family man, and he, in many ways. He's not a hypocrite when it comes to this, and people are accepting it.
Well, I do think that the John Edwards thing, in terms of the media reaction, yes, this is a big scandal and all that. But the legal ramifications are they did have that FEC attorney on, and this is a violation, many think, a violation of FEC law, which is federal law that the candidate certainly had knowledge of. So I don't think that the president is out of the woods on this legally, and I think it could potentially be a big scandal for him. And everybody likes to talk about the Russian scandal and all that, but with Bill Clinton, it was not Whitewater that took him down; it was a sex scandal.
And I think that this
has the potential to be the same thing for Trump because it was his name on the dotted line. He certainly had knowledge of it. And this is a bigger legal question.
Well, you keep saying, JP, that he certainly had knowledge of it. You got to prove that. You say,
right. And his attorney says he did not have knowledge of it. His Cohen, his personal attorney that brokered the deal with Stormy Daniels, his lawyer, says he just paid it out of his own money. He got a home equity loan and paid
$150,000
to pay it. And without any expectation that he would be paid back by the Trump campaign or by the president personally. And actually, if the president paid him back personally out of his own money, not out of his campaign money, that's legal.
Right. But they
He's got an out.
But the thing is that the out for Trump to say he didn't know about it is because he never signed it. He never signed the agreement.
And arguably, the agreement was between Cohen and Stormy Daniels or whatever her name was.
I think this is very close to what happened to John Edwards, and John Edwards got in legal trouble. I think it's—I could be wrong on this, but I think it's possible that John Edwards got disbarred for because of that.
Oh, he pled guilty to a crime and therefore had to be. I mean, he lost his.
But I wanted to go back to for a second because I know we got to go to what Joe said, and that is that our standards for what is unusual have become much more liberal. No question that has happened. We now know about the Kennedys. We know about Marilyn Monroe. We know about, you know, all of the rest of that stuff. So here we are all of these years later, and there's a certain ho-humism. There they go again. This is just something we've seen before.
I think we have 1 minute and two letters.
Contrary to what you said, we don't have a star. The Democrats and CD19 have six people buying to that nomination. I guess they meant vying. Anthony Delgado's buying the airwaves. CD19 is not an advertising area. We can't be bought. We have Dave Clegg, who has deep roots in CD19, has actually demonstrated that he cares. We have Jeff Beals, and we have Gareth Rhodes, to name a few. It's an excellent field to choose from. So star power is not what it's about, Barbara. In Rhinebag.
Well, let's see who wins.
And, well, Barbara certainly knows who the candidates are.
Right.
And Russ says, eye of the beholder. Trump's poll numbers are based on the perception that his policies create jobs, especially his trade policies will be after the midterm before his economic mismanagement begins to take a toll. Until then, he will continue swimming upstream in approvals. Russ from Menands.
Russ from Menands. So is when you look at these of what we're talking about in... When do you think we'll get a sense of this race, of where we are, what's happening, the midterms?
The local midterm ones or all of them?
Well, let's say national, but I mean, I think
the trend.
I mean, certainly, I think you can say that in close races, we're going to have two of them right here in our region, mm-hmm. aren't we?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there could be very close races, but my sense is, Joe, that it will go back and forth right through to October.
I agree with you, Mike.
What do you think? We have a few more minutes this morning, so we have till 20.
We do.
Yes, yeah. So we're okay. But what do you think there is about the when you look at overall, and you look at where we are with even if it goes through October, how much of what is happening at the top, how much of what is happening at the White House is back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, the chaos, that we just become kind of numb to it, and it becomes just about what's happening in the district.
It's going to be huge. Look, this is going to be a huge election. It's going to come down to the gerrymandered districts and how many districts have been set up so that they can't lose, how many extra Democrats you're going to need. I read a piece the other day that said you have to have at least 10% overall people subscribing, saying, we're Democrats, we're going to vote for the Democratic ticket. In other words, this is going to be a very, very close race. And the one thing that could doom all of the Democratic candidates would be if they, if people believe that this thing is in the bag. And by the way, don't forget about the kids.
Right. The kids are going to be crucial to this. And I am hoping, and I'm hopeful about this, that none of us think that we've got this in the bag. And that everyone is working incredibly hard. I mean, I can tell you on a local level, you know, Capital Women, the other indivisible groups, we're working really, really hard, and postcard parties and all kinds of stuff just to get people engaged and get them out. So I don't think anyone's thinking, oh, we can sit back.
Well, trust me, there will always be the so-called anyones who will sit back.
Sure.
There always will be. There always have been. In a contested, highly contested presidential election, I've said it 1,000 times, half the people don't vote.
Right. It'll be interesting to see what the numbers are for turnout. I think in the 2016 presidential election, it was something like 58%. Is that right?
Yeah. It's still in the midterms. It's a very low number, and I think it's Republicans are going to largely stay home, and Democrats are going to be motivated to vote.
Right.
Just me,
three people
personally went out to these marches over the weekend. These people would never have gone to any marches, and they went out for the first time. They brought their kids.
We can't underestimate how
people are outraged,
polarizing Trump is, and how the school shootings have motivated people, and people are going out. They're definitely standing up.
So. And God only knows what happens between now and then.
No kidding.
Right.
No kidding.
Sure.
There'll be more, God forbid, but there probably will be more shootings.
And what you said at the very beginning of our time together this morning, JP, is that, you know, you look at 44%, there's a good chance he could get, with that, that Donald Trump could be reelected.
Well, that's not the midterm.
No, I understand.
No, but you're right. There's a very good chance that Donald Trump could be reelected. And if people don't realize that the model was created in the last election and that those same three states are still up for grabs the same way that they were, you would be wrong.
Yeah, you look at him winning Ohio by 8 points, you almost can put the Ohio as a safe state for the Republicans, and you start the battleground becomes Wisconsin and Pennsylvania.
But are you talking about 2020?
Yes.
Oh, there's so much time between now and 2020.
Right. There's a lot that's going to happen.
Remember that Trump hasn't even been in office for 2 years.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe.
It feels like a lifetime.
And we still have the Mueller investigation.
Yes.
So let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Libby Post, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok. Thank you very much. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back.